Right, it's 5:30. Welcome to the Plan and Zone Commission meeting for the 21st of May.
Mr. Chairman, I'll approve minutes from the meeting of April 16th.
It's gone.
A second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve the minutes of April 16th, 2014. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. So again, welcome to the Plan and Zone Commission meeting for May 21st. We are a recommending body approved by or appointed by the City Council. If you have input on a particular case this evening, if you would go to the podium to my right and your left, state your name and your interest in the case, we would love to hear from you. And we review matters regarding site plans, zoning changes, and all other appropriate matters. So with that, Mr. Gregg, we will begin.
Mr. Chairman, the case we have before us, first on the agenda tonight, is a rezoning of an area that is south of 53rd Avenue, and this is Hopewell Creek. This is the Beaver Meadows first edition, and this is the Springs at Bettendorf, the gated apartment community. The area we're looking at is Hopewell Creek coming through here, and this overlay will be redone when the platting process, if it was be completed, we require that this be shown more correctly, I guess, if you will, on here. This is the area that the petitioner would like to use for a townhouse type development. And as you can see, there's a variety of zoning here around. He's going from A1 to R5, which is comparable to what is here. He wants to construct townhouses that would be of the same height and stature as this, but he would like to have more flexibility because of the tough terrain involved. Essentially, this would be the northeast property boundary right here is where you'd be looking from, and you'd be looking toward the west, Springs at Bettendorf right here. You'd be looking at Beaver Meadows second. This is 53rd Avenue. With this cutout here, that would have to be probably closed and then a new one placed in. This is the view looking toward the site, and it's bounded by these trees on the east. There's a ravine, of course, Hopewell Creek going through here with sanitary sewer on that side as well, and then the Springs at Bettendorf. This is the concept plan submitted with the, I believe, 42 units, and these are in a townhouse type arrangement. We've seen these before. What he's also done is he's taken and adjoined ground to each one of these. So he's done something a little bit different than what we've seen in the PUDs that are at Devil's Glen Road and Tanglefoot Lane. They just have simply outlined each one of these structures, and then everything else, all that ground would be owned in common. The other thing, looking at this too, is that this street here would be 52 feet right away, and it would be dedicated as a public street. As part of that, you have turnarounds right here to meet fire department standards, and then also you would have to look at the amount of fire suppression vis-a-vis these hydrants that would be placed in here. And then you have the detention area right here, and then we'll have to make sure that that 100-year flood boundary is reconstituted. There has been some fill in this area, and that's something as well that would have to be tested. This essentially shows the preliminary plat as it was linked over here to the Springs at Bettendorf, and there is a conservation easement running in this area for trees, which is 75 feet wide, and that is adjacent to the boundary right here, the east boundary of the Springs at Bettendorf. And then you have essentially again this area here that the petitioner intends to develop. And essentially, staff in reviewing this and looking at the zoning request, also understanding that the Fountains is an R5 zoned area. And that area, at the time it was zoned R5, there was nothing at all around that area. I do know that this body did not recommend for, however, the council approved it. What the petitioner is going for here is not as dense and is more comparable to what's found here, but the R5 zoning gives more flexibility, and given the very difficult topography throughout, we were trying to establish I guess, a common ground, and the fact that there is nothing adjoining over here, and that what's anticipated is more office-oriented and potentially commercial. And then when this ever were to get built out, that'd be single-family. But again, you do have a tree line separating here, and at this time, the petitioner has sought to do something here, whereas we don't know how much longer it may take for something to get built here residentially. So we looked at that. We weighed many different things in considering the petitioner's request from going to A1 to R5, and in doing so, we recommend approval of this request. I would ask, are there any questions?
Questions from the commission?
Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of questions.
Yes, ma'am.
Mostly clarifications. When you showed us the drawing, the property, and you were talking about the property lines, and you said mm-hmm. that this was unique, can you explain that again? I wasn't tracking exactly what you explained.
The property lines, well, there's one thing that this property does not terminate per se here. There is an additional area over here that is somewhat cut off from everything else, and it doesn't show on here, but it's like essentially like this. And that parcel is somewhat attached all the way here. What the petitioner wants to do is just take this piece and zone it R5. I think that's probably what it might have been. If I was saying that in the report about any uniqueness to the property lines, that's pretty much it. Because it doesn't terminate, this is still here, but this is somewhat unusable. Really, this has only got a use to the park, if it has any use at all, because the creek, Crow Creek, comes up through here, and then it goes down here again. And essentially, you do not have a joining of this parcel to be used with this.
I had the same question, I think, again, when he was going through it. It's pull up the one with the cul-de-sac on it again in the lot lines.
There you go.
There. You had circled it and said there was something unique
about
the property lines and the ends. That's, I didn't understand that either.
You mean?
You were circling the lot line and kind of said in the middle where there was a gap. You said that's unique.
I think it
past developments, right?
Right.
Oh, this, yeah. You mean these property mm-hmm. lines here? What they've done is they've replicated what was at the subdivision that's right above Lindquist Ford. And for some reason, I can't just think of it right now, but it's Crown Point 5th Edition is what it was. And what he's done here, unlike the four-unit development over there, is they took and they incorporated additional land to each one of these. Typically, like you see at the PUD level, again, at Tanglefoot Lane and Devil's Glen Road, is you just see these cut out, and each townhouse has its own separated common wall. And then it has everything owned in common. This land typically would be owned in common or held in common, and all you would see is each one of these units having its own boundaries. In this instance, you have the addition of this area and that area here that have been added to each one of these. And it provides a rather unique setup similar to what one sees over at Crown Point 5th Edition. And that one was zoned C5, that edition. But they put in a townhouse development as multifamily when it was permitted at that time as a special or as a permitted use under the code. So this is a little bit more unique development. The petitioner at some point as well may ask for a PUD here with the underlying zoning being R5. So because of the unique topography, we're trying to figure out how something might correctly work. If you look at these here, these are pretty much townhouses here. They're joined together as multifamilies, what we considered them, and we might consider the same here, but these each have their own little area that is all held in common, and then each one of these is rented out, probably with its own legal description, maybe for appraisal purposes or assessment purposes. But essentially, he's going with a different style of townhouse here that may be a little more dense than here, but essentially these are going to be taller than these. So it's just a different design that we don't often see.
So does that speak to the ownership of the property? If I purchase one of these, I own the land around it, and I'm responsible for maintaining it.
Yes, or there could be an arrangement made where the homeowners association, even though you own the property, there could be a caretaker hired in common for everyone here who comes in and does all the yard work. So there's two ways to look at it. It either can be done individually or it can be done under the homeowners organization. And they hire the contractor to go and do all the work.
Okay. I know we're just talking about rezoning now. Yeah, the other clarification, these units back up to the west and face the east?
I believe they'll be facing, yeah, the east.
Okay, and is there a tree line on the other side of the street or only to the rear?
There's a tree line right now.
Okay.
It's right here, and then it abates in here, and then there's another spot right about here where it abates. But for the most part, there's a tree line that has been sort of kept here, and then everything else on this side has been farmed and plowed. And then there is a tree area over here, and you still have this 75-foot wide easement right here where there's trees that have been maintained. And that's not part of this. This area here is part of this lot.
And neither of those are part of the springs. That's...
No, I mean, it's...
That's it, the easement.
Yeah, and platform, this is lot three, the Springs of Bettendorf. In terms of the site itself, though, site plan, this is the Springs of Bettendorf right here.
All right. Thank you, Greg.
Greg, I don't see any driveways on here. Is parking all on the street?
The design is parking underneath each one of these units, and it's at least two spaces within each of these. And then there's a walk-up, and then there's an area in back as well where there's living area.
Thank you.
Greg, the street appears to be on the eastern edge. Will there be any landscape buffer required in there, number one? And number two, you mentioned turnarounds required by the city and or fire department. So I'm not quite sure how they would function if they're on the east side of the street as well, or are they only the little nubs you show on the west side of the street?
I believe these are the turnarounds, as they'd be right here, so that they would be able to come in, vehicle would be able to go back like this and then come out like that. As far as the, this is all A1 over here. In terms of putting up any landscaping along here, that would have to be something that we would have to look at in terms of the zoning here versus what it is here, because in the future we anticipate a traditional residential use here. We'd have to look at the burden placed here to look at the difference. There may be more or less, but to buffer at this time this development from what is basically farmland, it almost seems like it's in, you know, there's no purpose in doing so.
No,
but at the time we'd have to think about how these are sort of broken down, and then we'd have to think about what would be staged in potentially along here. I mean, if you could plant something like arborvitae or some type of screening that would grow in and then provide that buffer so that you would have that separation of dense vegetation in there, that's probably one thing we could consider.
The developer can put the road to the east side of the property line, though. There's no restriction as far as setback from the property line.
We typically don't view, we would have to look at the setback. I mean, in terms of what it could be, it'd be about 5 feet. It could be that distance, because if it was R5, he's already met that setback for the side yard pretty much over here. And then the lee side, I believe, would be 5 feet.
Yeah, keep in mind that the street's going to be city property. That's going to be city right away.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, Bill, from the future development standpoint, that given this developer coming in now, and if there is some kind of buffer, at least providing for a future buffer space, so that that burden's not on the next developer because this guy went all the way to the property line.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. I understand.
Yep. Any other questions from the commission? Hearing none. Any from the audience regarding this case? Nobody in the audience.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case 14039, subject to staff recommendations.
I'll second that.
Okay, we have a motion and a second to approve case 14039, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Okay, great.
Our next project entails this lot here, which is lot 43 of what is currently Highlands third edition. It was sort of a parcel that got left out by itself. And you've seen this before, but now the petitioner, after gaining a rezoning to make this R3, has decided to bring forth both the preliminary and final plat at the same time, given it's only six lots. We felt that they both could be brought together. This area right here is where the private drive will be for this particular site. And we have each unit here, and we have three structures, six units total. The duplexes that are permitted use within the district. Preliminary plat here showing pretty much the layout of water main and sewer coming about in this area. Got a hydrant right here, and then showing all these entryways coming out here as drives, essentially, onto the private drive. And again, given the constrained nature of the parcel, putting in a right-of-way and placing that in here would severely constrain this for any type of use, really. It was just a lot that should never have been platted because it was simply not attractive, given the topography sloping down, for commercial use. So essentially what you got is a remnant, and making the best of all worlds, I guess, here. It does fit within our subdivision ordinance that a private drive can serve three structures, or essentially these six different units in the duplex form. Here's what the final plat looks like. Again, the private drive being shown here in the setbacks for the front yard at 25 feet. And then each one of these lots meeting the ordinance requirement for what would be a duplex size lot. Staff, in evaluating this proposal, would recommend approval. Given the conditions in the report, I would ask if there are any questions.
Questions from the commission? Similar question to the last one, Greg. Here we've got a cul-de-sac again against a property line, and that's butting up against those other duplexes that are sitting to the north there. Any landscape buffer in there?
Well, people who might have to provide the landscape buffer, and we aren't going to require it, would be these people up here in the C5 district. Because again, this was a use that was brought in about 2003, and since then we have taken duplex use, two family dwellings, out of the C5 ordinance as a special use. These have been essentially given grandfathered status within our C5 ordinance. They're commercial. These areas right here now are R3. And they're conforming. So if anybody would have to have had to provided any type of landscaping, it'd be folks over here.
Another question, it references fire hydrants shall be privately owned and maintained because they do not fall within the right of way. That's because of the private road.
That's something that I would defer to our fire captain, Mr. Knorr. He could answer that.
And actually, that has changed over the last week. I was on vacation last week. Our fire chief spoke with the developer and also with the water company. They made arrangements to have an additional public hydrant placed outside, just to the right of the court there, not at the end of the court, but at the beginning of the court, I believe. I was not involved in the conversation, so I don't know the exact location. Is that correct, Greg?
Remain where it is, and they'll use the easement coming from the south around the place of hydrant, but it will be public.
Okay, great. Then last question from me. It makes reference to a agreement or a requirement that they maintain the streets under some kind of private agreement. From a practical manner, how do we monitor that and make sure that they're accessible, then that we could drive into it, they're not falling apart? How do we do that?
Basically, well, if it's private property, it's their responsibility to maintain it. It's
we don't
just
care.
As simple as that.
Okay. All right. Any questions?
Well, I just know that there's a, it says maintenance of the outlaw shall be conducted by the homeowners association. I am assuming the plat documents are going to form a homeowners association. Okay.
Anyone Greg, else? Could you go back to the aerial photo? Okay. All right. Thank you.
Anyone else in the commission? Anyone in the audience with regard to this case like to make a comment or a question? Seeing none, I'll return to the commission.
We have a motion.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case 14037, subject to staff recommendations.
Second.
We have a motion and a second to approve case 14037, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 1437 passes.
You want to hear 1438 as well?
Do we? I guess we can take them concurrently since, yes, ma'am. You seem to be the motioner today, so please do.
I move that we approve case 14038 subject to staff recommendations.
Second.
You got it.
Okay, I got it.
Okay.
Kind of on a way.
Break the pattern, good. All right, we have a motion and a second to approve case 14038 subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. 14038 passes.
Mr. Chairman, our next case involves essentially one that came before you earlier. It has a few modifications that were made to the plat here for the Haley Heights third edition. And it's still the same outlined area shown here. This being 53rd Avenue and then Middle Road. This is the preliminary plat, and the area highlighted in aqua here is the area that's under consideration. That we'll be looking at is the final plat. This is the first one that came before you. Essentially, you have the lots laid out mainly in an L fashion, and you still have outlot A. Additions have been added, though, to accommodate mainly water runoff from stormwater. The area highlighted in yellow here is an increased easement size, and then this here is a new easement coming back here into outlot A, and you have this addition here of another drainage easement to take water into outlot A. And there were some minor changes on the dimensions of these three lots that are rather, minor, just to accommodate the widening of this easement here. Other than that, you're pretty much looking at the same plat as you recommended approval for last time out. Regarding Haley Heights third edition, staff would make a recommendation for approval with the conditions listed in the report. I would ask, are there any questions?
Questions on the part of the commission? Seeing none, anyone in the audience with regard to this case? Seeing none, I'll return back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case number 14-040, subject to staff recommendations.
I'll second.
We have a motion and a second to approve case 14040, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, same sign. 14040 is approved.
We're back to about the same area. It seems every one of these is about all this area here, and that shows you how much the development's finally coming in as infill. The lodges of Beaver Meadows Second is essentially this area right here above the first edition, right off of 53rd. The area outlined in purple are the lots on the preliminary plat that are being considered tonight. And you will have a future access from 55th Avenue joining Haley Heights Third here. And then you have the means of entry right here. And eventually you'll have that from the Hopewell Hills additions up to the north. We have 25 lots here within this subdivision. Again, 55th Avenue being the means of access, and then Idaho Drive. We will have also this street segment named something else by the time this goes before the city council. We tried to break these up because under our city ordinance, addresses have to go in ascending order if they're going from the south to the north, and ascending order if they're going from west to east. And to address this parcel, when the numbers are going here in from this area in a descending order, and then all of a sudden to try to twist this around up here when it should be going upwardly in numerical order, we wanted to try to defeat that quandary. And the problem is, we've had this happen in the past where you get these streets that are somewhat like this. And we want to try to make sure we stay at the confines of that ordinance, because we do have a logical basis to go on, and it is required. So that's why we're looking at that segment. Other than that, staff would recommend approval of this particular proposal with the conditions listed in the report. I would ask, are there any questions?
Questions on the part of the commission? I have two, Greg. One, the reference in the back to, or the recommendations, number four, Flag for Roy, Hammerhead, I'm assuming that's temporary. That's right there.
It would be here, and then also we'd have to require one up here as well, too.
Just until it's connected, then?
Yes, because if we have a length basically greater than one lot width, when you come up to this point, then we require that, and we require it be built, so it makes for a far easier turnaround for emergency response vehicles.
Yep. And then just looking at the numbering on the last page of the report, it had the, it looked like the numbers are right, 23, 24, but looking at the other plat, the smaller scale, the numbering convention was different.
You mean the preliminary plat?
That one, yeah, the numbering convention on those lots are different than what the next page you just were on.
Yeah, these are, well, I mean, these are just the total number for staged-in subdivisions, yeah.
Well, I was just looking where the hammerheads in reference, when I was trying to find the location of the hammerheads, it said 23 and 24. I couldn't find it on this sheet. So
yeah,
this numbering convention doesn't tie
23
to that
24
one.
For the final plat.
Okay, so that, those are the correct, that's on there now, correct mm-hmm. lot numbers. Okay. Those were my only questions. Anyone else in the commission? Anyone in the audience with regard to this case? Seeing none, I'll return to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I'll be happy to make a motion to approve case number 14-041, final plat for the lodges of Beaver Meadows second edition, subject to the recommendations from staff.
Great.
A second.
We have a motion and a second to approve case 14-041, subject to staff recommendations. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 14-041 is approved. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, this next proposal is one typically you don't see much, because this is about the first PR overlay district that the city's done probably since about 1996 or 98. And as part of that phase, a development plan may accompany the rezoning process. The rezoning process for this proposal, you already made a recommendation on it, but because City Council right now is down two members, that proposal as an ordinance change would be voted on. If it were, it'd come out essentially, I believe, where legal counsel would say it'd be 5-2 vote, which would defeat it, because you have two members who are not currently, there are, well, two vacancies, and those are considered no votes. So during this process, the petitioner may submit a development plan. The plat and the preliminary plat, may come around this time as well, but a final plat, since there is no zoning of PR overlay at present, that final plat could not be approved until the zoning's approved, because the boundaries on the final plat have to represent what the PR overlay district permits. Okay. So what we see before us is what's permitted, a development plan right now coming before the final plat, which is somewhat out of order and normally what we see in any other type of zoning situation. What the petitioner wants to do essentially is have detached type units placed on lots that are typically smaller than what we would see in an R3 district. Typically, we would see 70 feet in width, and most of these will be 55 feet in width. The square footage on what is required for R3 is 8,400 square feet for single family, and here we have lesser square footage for each of these lots, and in this area right here, some of the differences are noted. As well, the letter here that you see talks about staging in certain things, which as you see in PUDs as well, you'll see it here in these PR overlay districts, is that you have a requirement to place in a schedule. And this may change, and it's something that essentially the developer has to maintain a certain schedule and informing this body, but also as well as the city council and staff as to how things are sort of proceeding with this. As well, there's a reasoning behind what the petitioner is asking for, which is also required in the ordinance. And this is the ordinance essentially, again, PR overlay district, pretty much the whole ordinance here, and we do have it online for anybody who would like to read it. And then these are the viable regulations from the R3 zoning that are listed right here regarding this project. This is the way the unit will look. Essentially, it's 40 feet in width. I believe it's still the same design. It'll be able to fit on the lot then within the confines of a 10-5-foot stagger, essentially. This is one part of the development plan here showing the utilities. It was getting rather complicated to show all the layers at once, so the engineer broke these out, and this is the site layout and utility plan showing each of the lots and then the utilities as they're joined throughout each of these lots, showing sanitary, storm sewer, and I believe water as well. And then we went to the grading plan, which then showed the placement of each unit on these lots and essentially where they fit in, and then the topography on each of these lots. There are some utilities shown as well, but essentially to make it easier to read, we saw that it would be broken out into these stages. And here again, you have the hammerhead turnaround necessitated by the ending of this street here within the development. And staff would again say, in making your recommendation to City Council, that you consider the surrounding area and then consider the concept as it might fit into this area, given the surrounding structures that have been built within the subdivisions out here in the Highlands area. I would ask, are there any questions?
Questions in the part of the commission?
Just as a process clarification, if we approve the development plan, what's the next step? Because this is a different process. What happens?
What's going to occur is essentially, I think we would put this before City Council once the overlay district has been approved, and it would take till the, I believe, the second council meeting in August. If we can seat the two members at that special election in July, the earliest that this could go before City Council may be at that meeting. We don't know whether we would allow it to proceed until the zoning gets in place, but the earliest the zoning can be approved by City Council at a third reading would be at the on the third Tuesday of within August. So this may come in September, or at the earliest it could come in August, but we aren't quite certain yet as to the total outcome of that election and how everything will be, you know, completed.
Okay, thank you.
There is still a final plat that needs to be mm-hmm. reviewed also in conjunction with this.
I guess a question in general, Greg, and maybe Bill too. I'm not sure I'm following that these 55-foot lots are consistent with what's developed in surrounding properties. Do we have other 55-foot lots in any kind of proximity to this development?
If you recall, the property zoned R3. The original concept was to come in with 45-foot lots, which are allowed, and attached units. So there are some of those that exist both to the east and west of this. There are also some single-family homes that exist on compliant R1 and R2 lots. So you kind of have a little bit of a mix up there. As we looked at this compared to the density of the attached duplexes on 45-foot lots, staff's perspective was this is less dense than what could be built there without okay. any further approvals from either the Planning and Zoning Commission or City Council.
So we've got duplexes in there on 45, so two units on a 90-foot lot, essentially.
That's correct.
Okay. Versus two units on 110 here.
And so how does the square footage of these units compare to what's on the 45-foot lot? Are they comparable?
I think their square footage is almost identical. Okay. The developer can, of course, answer that. He's shaking his head yes.
Okay.
Okay. Any other questions by the commission?
What price range of homes are these running in?
I think the developer can answer that question. Mm-hmm.
My name is Dan Dolan. I'm the developer. We have very good comps. We could hit them with a rock. They're just north of the top of this addition, and they're anywhere from 300 to 375,000.
Okay. Any other questions in the commission? Nope. Did we have any other comments? Greg, did you want to?
Good evening. My name is Greg Jaeger. I'm an attorney associated with the Pasternak firm here tonight on behalf of Mr. Dolan and Town and Country, Bettendorf LC. I wanted to talk for just a minute about the PR zoning because it is sort of unusual that it's coming forward. And from my perspective, what's going on is in the PR zoning, the city agrees to modify or release or whatever word you want to use, alter some of the existing standards in the otherwise established zone. That is, in an R3 zone, you have certain dimensions that are required. In the PR3 zone, the council is given the opportunity under the code to alter those requirements. And in exchange, the developer is expected to lay out his cards. In other words, the developer has to present a plan that says, this is how we're going to develop this subdivision. And that specific plan has to be approved by the city council. When the subdivision is completed, the council again has to pass another resolution that says, yes, this plan has been completed as was agreed between the city and the developer at the time the process started. So that makes it a little unusual in terms of what you see or how this works. For the plan that's before you this evening, before I got involved, this came to you as a rezoning. And really the rezoning and the plan were considered as separate items. And I don't see that the rezoning would go forward without plan approval. I don't see that the plan would go forward without rezoning approval. So I think the two are really tied together because that's the nature of this zoning district. In other words, the plan, which includes some modifications to side yards and square footage, the plan has to be approved. And if it isn't approved, then there's really no purpose in the PR zoning. So I've talked to your corporate counsel about this, and we've agreed that when this goes in front of the city council, the plan will have to go in front of the city council at the same time as the rezoning so that the council sees what's going on and the council can make an informed decision about the rezoning and the plan. But we've agreed that you won't have the council approve the plan until the final reading of the rezoning ordinance. That way both are either approved by the council at the same time or both are turned down by the council at the same time, and you don't have one hanging out on the other. So that's sort of the procedural or the mechanics of it. As to the merits of this, the developer understands that when this came forward it was unusual and generated some angst in the adjoining properties. And the developer had, I think, two separate meetings with adjoining property owners and presented at the second meeting, which took place after the rezoning was approved by the Planning and Zoning Commission. At the second meeting, the developer presented several different alternative proposals for the subdivision, how the plan could be put together. The one that's before you this evening is the plan that seemed to be the one that was most acceptable. I'm not going to speak for the neighbors and say that all of them approve it 100%, but I would say that it seemed to generate the least amount of controversy or objection, I would say it that way. In this proposal that is before you this evening, the developer has actually given up four lots from the prior proposals that he started with and has increased all of the lot sizes throughout the subdivision. Additionally, and since I can't tell you north or south from this angle, I will say to the right side of the screen that's before you, the side yard setbacks on those properties have been increased to 7.5 feet from the 5 feet that was initially proposed, because that seemed to be a concern of the residents when they met, that they wanted to have the full side yard setbacks in place for at least the homes on that side, the homes that were going to be immediately adjoining the existing neighborhood. And so that change was made by the developer as well. In considering whether this plan should be approved, ultimately I think the key is this going to be a good subdivision for the city of Bettendorf? Is this going to serve the purposes for which the zoning and the comprehensive plan have been put together? In other words, as you work towards the intersection, is this the kind of use that's going to be a buffer with smaller lots and single family as opposed to what's ultimately coming on the commercial? Is this the kind of subdivision that's going to build tax base? I think you've already heard the homes are going to be priced at $350 to $375. And then ultimately, is this the kind of thing that's going to adversely impact adjoining properties? And in the course of a prior life, I sat through a lot of meetings where a lot of neighbors were concerned about the impact of subsequent development. In my experience, I don't recall ever having someone come in 2 years later and saying, "You SOB, my property went down 20%. I never had that experience in the entire time I was serving in government service. I don't think that a subdivision that's going to provide $350,000 to $375,000 homes can truly be considered adverse impact for adjoining properties. I will also say one of the components of this subdivision is that it's going to have common exterior maintenance and snow removal. I think that's one of the marketing draws for this complex. So to the extent that neighbors may be concerned about the aesthetics of how things develop, I think those concerns ought to be alleviated in a common maintenance situation. All of the yards will be maintained. All of the snow will be removed. This will be a nice development that will fit well with adjoining properties. If there's anything else I can add, I'm glad to do that. The developer is here, so is the engineer who can talk about specifics. The developer can also talk about marketing. I understand from Bill that one of the council goals this year is a redo of the comprehensive plan. I think when you get into some of the specifics of the market change that's occurred over the last 3 years, I think you will see proposals coming forth that will try to accommodate this kind of development, because my expectation is that you're going to see more requests for PR zoning in the near future. It's a way of trying to meet market demands that exist now that maybe didn't exist 3 or 4 years ago. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Greg. Question, I guess, I'll ask Christine and you kind of together, so because I'm not familiar with the detail level. You referenced that the plan, the development plan, goes before the City Council. What level of detail is presented to the City Council? Is it the same level that we see here, or is it enhanced?
No, it'd be the exact same plan that you're reviewing tonight.
And then when we look at this plan with the footprints of the homes on it, is that as it would be developed then?
That's the anticipation.
Those are the
sir.
Footprints.
The developer is essentially locked in to this plan.
Okay.
And the timeline that he has indicated.
And any deviation from that plan would require a change by whom or how would that happen?
Back to you guys.
Yeah.
Back
to
us. Okay. And then, Greg, you had referenced where the objections were coming from. Do you have a feel from relative to proximity of this development, where the concerns, was it to the east, was it to the north, where were the objecting comments coming from?
Assuming north is towards the top, I believe the objectors were mostly coming to the, from the east.
Okay.
I attended both neighborhood meetings, and I think the objections came directly from the east of this.
Okay.
Can I ask about, you know, if the developer doesn't meet the plan, and I'm assuming part of the plan is this letter of May 2nd, 2014, where it says it's gonna, all homes are gonna be done by the end of 2016, with approximately one home being constructed every month.
Yep.
So if the developer doesn't meet this plan, and it's, who's gonna bring it to our attention? Is it going to be Bill? And then what remedy do we have if, I mean, we're not developers, so what do we,
very
do we
true.
Take over the development at that point? I mean, what's the remedy that we have if the developer doesn't meet the plan?
The zoning could revert back to the underlying zoning. The plan could be amended. There's several different things that could occur.
But what good does it do to revert? What good does it do to revert back to the underlying zoning if you've got half of the houses built on the lots and then the half can't be sold or marketed? Where does that leave?
That is a concern in that you're trying to predict the future. I'm not going to argue otherwise. Your remedies are, as Ms. Stone has said, you have to think about this somewhat as conditional zoning. And what happens when the condition on the zoning isn't met? What do you do? That was always a heartburn in my prior life, because that was very much, what do you do? In this case, I think what happens is, not that the concept is flawed, but that for whatever reason, the interest rates jump to 20% and you can't market properties. I think you would sit down the developer and the city to negotiate an amendment to the plan to try and accommodate changing circumstances. Obviously, in any city, you're trying to foster a climate of business growth. If something is reasonable, you'll try to work it out. If something is unreasonable, then you have to go your own way. As Ms. Stone said, you can revert to zoning. I would think another option that's out there, and my client probably won't be overly thrilled with me in saying this, but you simply don't give building permits or occupancy permits. You simply stop things from going any further. And that's not a developer preferred option, I'll guarantee you.
Okay, and so if I'm looking at this plat, and I'm here and I see that, like, for instance, lots 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and 22, there's going to be a minimum 5-foot setback from the side lot line. Does that mean those houses are going to be probably 10 feet apart?
Yes.
And what's the square footage of these houses that are being built? I didn't see that in the materials.
I'll defer to the
in general,
the developer in that, in terms of square footage. As an adjunct to that, if I can have Mr. Dolan also talk about the marketing of the properties and who they're intended to be. If you were talking about somebody with six kids, I would say that a 5-yard setback may not be a very good thing.
We've sold this product in multiple locations. The smallest version is probably 1,450 square feet. Most that we're selling now are over 1,700 square feet, so I assume we're going to be somewhere between 1,400 and 1,800 square feet. I'm marketing to what I call an aging population, looking for smaller footprint, most people downsizing, single level, close to amenities, and people that fiercely want to stay in Bettendorf because they've been building in Davenport for many years. I think you started another question.
No, go ahead.
The question is the marketing of these units to the empty nesters. Are they the kinds of folks who are going to need yards on the side?
Yeah. So far, we've had almost 40 sales out there, and we have no children. Not that we discriminate. There's no age. requirements. It's just who shows up when you build a level entry house with outside services provided. When we talked about a timeline, we've been selling a house out there about every 4.5 weeks. So we take, there's 22 lots there times 4.5. It's about 100 weeks, 2 years. I think we have to look at the finish line there because it's relative to the starting line. If this gets approved in August, my experience is every time you put a subdivision in, it's almost a year by the time you grade underground streets, Mid-American Energy and Iowa American Water. So that puts us almost into 2016 before we even get started here. So I think we have to look at that finish line. When we talked about this early on, what's the remedy if there's all the houses aren't sold, is we come to the council and ask for an extension as long as we're doing what we said we were going to do. When we try to put a timetable together, it's what's historically happened there. There's no guarantees when you build a house how fast it's going to be there.
So we do think it's a reasonable timeline.
I believe it's a real fire timeline because we just went through the last couple years building the same house within a stone's throw away. But it's all based on when we get to start on that addition.
Okay.
Somewhat anecdotal, but I was through that area when they were doing the home parade of homes, and it's pretty much what you described. Lots of empty or about to be empty nesters looking for a get rid of the big house and buy the small house and one flat level. If I heard it once, I heard it 100 times. It's the new marketing ploy for Bettendorf. So, I did hear that while I was out there. So, anyone else in the audience comments in regard to this case?
Mr. Chairman, I do have a comment.
Yes.
And I would request that item recommendation number 4 be removed. Generally, we look at hydrant placement along public streets after the plat has been approved by council, and there's no need for us to do that ahead of time. If it's a private street, we do look at hydrant locations and require that to be on the plat, but this to be a public street, we do not need to do that.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am.
I'm Sue Loaf, and I live at 4004 Charles Court. We're directly to the east, lot 14 in the Highlands Edition. We have had a couple meetings with the developer. I feel we've come a long way with that. The side yard setbacks were a big factor for us that addressed the appearance that would more closely match what we have. I just have a couple questions. In the packet, it addresses the detention basin at lot 24. And I don't see a lot 24 on this.
It should be part of, I believe, the Glenn Gevlin addition that is over in this area. And I believe it's in this area that it's referred to.
And one of the requests we had at our meeting with the homeowners, I'm representing some that couldn't be here tonight, was that the developer was going to contact some of the homeowners who live adjacent to it regarding the drainage issue to make sure that the topography was going to drain correctly and not directly into their backyards, because there's some concern right now with the proper drainage. And I believe those are lots 15 and 16 that are adjacent to that, which would be along lot 8, 9, and 10. And as of yet, they haven't been contacted about that, so that's a concern. And then when I was doing my research initially for this, I came across when this first came to the planning and zoning in August of 2012, the original Glenn Gevlin Phase 2 was approved, And the Highland Point First Edition, which is the current plat for this property, it's currently 12 lots. There was a motion at the P&amp;Z meeting that no part of Highland Point First Edition would be allowed to be replatted until such time as the original plat was vacated. And that was motion and approved. My question is, what's involved with vacating that, and is that still going on?
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Bill.
I did research that for Ms. Loaf, and the resolution was passed by the City Council said that the plat would be vacated or replatted. So the resolution at the council level said they could vacate or replat, so they have that option.
And I'm assuming I'm hearing a slight difference between what was recommended by the plan and zone and approved and what was actually adopted by the City Council.
Yes.
And we are a recommending body to the City Council, so the City Council had the opportunity and latitude to somewhat modify that language. Am I saying that correctly?
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
So I just want to make sure I understand that this would be the platting process of this too, then. Would replace the current plat.
Yeah.
And okay.
I'm impressed you did your homework. Very good.
So, Bill, does that mean that if the City Council approves this, they would vacate the plat at the same time they approve the new one? Or has it already been vacated?
Well, the question came up with Planning and Zoning Commission. I don't know that we had the exact answer. We didn't know that the right-of-way that the city already owned was going to be exactly the same on both plats. By the time we got to council, we found out it was. So as long as it didn't have to come in and convey right-of-way from the city back to the developer or vice versa, they have the right to come in and replat any of the property that's already contained within that plat. So that was how that came about.
I heard reference to the drainage issues adjacent to lots 8, 9, and 10, Ms. Loaf, and waiting to hear back. Has that drainage issue been addressed?
Yes, sir. I'm Mike Janicek with McClure Engineering. I'm the engineer on the project, and I would like to address those couple drainage questions that she had. The first question was in regards to those lots 8, 9, and 10, which are kind of at the southeast corner mm-hmm. of our development here, and it's being graded to convey the water directly to the south to an existing drainage way to the south, those rear yards. And there's the contours show that on the construction plans. There's also a note on the final plat. There's a note that's been prepared and previously submitted that will be reviewed at a future date. It says lots 1 through 10 shall have a swale graded in the rear yard to keep drainage from leaving east to the Highlands first and third edition. So basically none of our stormwater on the east side of our property will go to the east properties. It's all going south of our property. So those property owners will not be getting any additional water than what they are now. In fact, they'll be getting less because we'll be getting all the front yards. We'll be going to our storm sewer system that's in our streets, which will then be conveyed to the west, which will kind of get into this next question that she had. Where is that lot 24? That lot 24 is an existing detention pond that is southeast of Glengevlin First. Glengevlin Third is what we're looking at today, which is Hatch. Glengevlin Fourth is directly to the west, which is that cul-de-sac, and the detention pond is to the southwest of that future cul-de-sac. And pretty much all the proposed storm sewer will head west to the end of the cul-de-sac, and then storm sewer kind of goes northwest, outlets into a drainage basin, and that drainage way then drains to the southwest into a detention pond. And that's a regional detention pond that was appropriately sized to handle all of the Glengevlin additions.
Great, Mike, thanks for filling us in on that. Any other questions from the audience or comments? And I guess I'd just like to make a general statement. I'm encouraged to see the communication between the developer and the homeowners. That's the way it works great. Bill, thank you for participating in that because it addresses a lot of issues up front that we don't have to fight out at a table here. So thank you for that. So anyone else in regard to this case? Back to the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we approve case 14042, subject to staff recommendations, including the recommendation that recommendation number four be struck.
I'll second that.
We have a motion and a second to approve case 14042, subject to staff recommendations, including the elimination of recommendation number four. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. 14042 passes. I think that takes us to commission update, doesn't it, Bill?
I believe it does, Mr. Chairman.
You're on.
Subsequent to your last Planning and Zoning Commission meeting, the City Council followed your lead and approved the final plat of the Wyndham West First Edition and the final plat of the Wendy's Second Edition. Last Monday, the 18th, we had the kickoff meeting for the County Plan Steering Committee. About an hour and a half meeting, pretty fast paced. I thought it went pretty well. Ms. Kaplow, you were there. Do you have any comments?
It was fast paced. I was really impressed with the consulting group that you're using to guide the city and the steering committee through the process. They're obviously very experienced and knowledgeable, and I think the outcome is going to be outstanding. I would compliment you, Bill, and the mayor on the committee that was put together. It's a great cross-section of people throughout the community with lots of varied backgrounds. I think the whole process is stacked for a successful outcome.
I think we're on the right track.
Definitely.
There was a little homework that was sent out. One is a survey that they ask you to fill out, and it's pretty simple. Just click on the boxes that you agree with. And the other homework that was given to everybody was we'd like to put together some focus groups, downtown, business leaders, education people. And we'd like to have those meetings take place on June 23rd, 24th, and 25th. And part of the homework was if anybody has any suggestions for people to sit in on those focus groups, please let me know, because we'll be trying to compile those names as soon as possible. And once you get the name, you have to ask people if they're interested. And then once you find out they're interested, then you have to get their contact information. We have to pass that on to our consultant, RDG. So we got kind of a short window to make a lot of things come together here. Next steering committee meeting is tentatively set for 5 o'clock on the 25th. So it should be some good information that should directly follow the meetings with the majority of the focus groups. So anybody has any comments on the process, the survey, anything through this whole endeavor, don't hesitate to contact me, and I'll certainly pass that on to our consultants.
I think you're looking at a great pool of focus group candidates here.
Well, I agree.
Yeah, I'd be happy to recommend all of them.
Okay. Well, that makes it simple.
Thanks, Ann.
Just have Lisa forward the contact information for the Planning and Zoning Commission, RDG.
This couldn't be easier.
Thank you, Mr.
Chairman.
I planned
to be at the next meeting. I was out of town and missed that one, so I'm sorry for that.
So you're looking at, I missed it too. So it's the 25th of June?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to get it kind of on my calendar tentatively.
The focus groups are 23rd, 24th, 25th. Steering committee is 5 o'clock on the 25th.
Okay.
Great.
Thanks.
Anything else for the good of the order?
Not that I can think of.
Then I need a motion, and I know who's doing the motion. This evening.
You can
move. Can we adjourn?
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
It's been moved and seconded. We're adjourned.
All right.